This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Your childhood retainers, those lanyards you made at summer camp, the loose hiking pamphlets you picked up on the way to Yosemite, dilapidated lawn furniture, vintage doorknobs, broken tennis rackets, and the comic books that used to fit neatly on the shelf in the closet and now fill the whole thing. All across the country, vast piles of dubious value gather in attics, garages, and living rooms. And over the past 35 years, an entire industry evolved to cater to what's been called disposophobia, self-storage rentals, where we stash the stuff we simply can't bring ourselves to throw away. I know, it's not junk, it's a collection. And you really do plan to read that 10-year backlog of New Yorkers, and it would be heartless to chuck your daughter's stuffed animals. And so it begins. We want to hear from you. What's the one utterly useless thing that you can't bring yourself to get rid of, or do you keep too much of everything? Join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, giant hard drives lead to a whole new generation of digital hoarding. But first, pack rats. We begin with Suzanne Gannon. She's a freelance lifestyle writer and author of the New York Times article Hooked on Storage, a reformed storage addict herself. She joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
What kinds of things do people put away in storage? I mean, sometimes it makes perfect sense if you're in the middle of moving or having help you a divorce or something like that.
That's certainly the seductive quality of it, is that you kind of get seduced into it as a temporary convenience during a move. But what I found is that the contents of these units really run the gamut from everything from, you know, a plush toy collection, stuffed animals, to old vinyl LPs, to old newspapers, fashions that have long lost their currency.
What did you keep in your rental units?
In my unit, I had some what I would classify as legitimate items, such as, you know, antiques that I found to be precious that I'm sure were not really worth anything, mm-hmm. to things that were certainly something that you could classify as junk, such as old autograph books from, you know, yearbooks, and old clothing and T-shirts from every party that I had been at college, et cetera.
The antiques thing rang a bell. I mean, I think America is filled with people who are convinced that if the Antiques Roadshow would just come to their house,
exactly, that they would have a pot of gold at their feet. That is so true.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of things that people keep for sentimental reasons, but they're also. Let me read you this email we got from Joanna in Salt Lake City. I'm a terrible pack rat about clothes. I get really attached to clothes that remind me of different times of my life. Clothes that no longer fit me, can't throw those out because I'll get back in them someday. Clothes that I bought and never wore, can't throw those out because I paid good money for them. Clothes that I wear all the time and love to wear, how can I part with those? And on. The result is that I have boxes and boxes of clothes in my attic and spare room, and in reality, I wear only a handful of them. I think I inherited this clothes hoarding behavior from my mother, but she at least had the good sense to have three daughters so she could pass the stuff along and go out shopping again.
That is so true. That echoes very much a lot of what I heard from some of the women that I interviewed in doing this story. And even one woman who was in Manhattan, she had an attachment to the clothing of her young child, and he was only between 1 and 2 years old, I think, when I was reporting the story. And she had so many different items of his, including every new pair of shoes that he had worn and his first pacifier. And she was basically running a maternity clothing business out of her storage unit, giving her old maternity clothes to friends. And then they'd drop them back off at the storage unit when they were done with them. And then she'd loan them out to someone else.
It's funny. And it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people get the storage unit as, well, this is going to solve the problem. And that's not always what happens.
That is not always what happens. As one of my editors kept saying, it's the gateway drug. It's the gateway drug. They sign on with the 10x6, and the next thing you know, they have three that are, you know, 300 cubic feet each. What happens is that once they clear out, you know, our society, I think, tells us that, you know, the organizers are experiencing this little boomlet themselves. Mm-hmm. And our society tells us, be organized, you know, have a feng shui environment, et cetera. So you declutter your immediate environment. You push it off to the side somewhere where you can't see it in the storage unit. And the next thing you know, like this woman in the Chicago area that I interviewed, the vacuum of space that was created by the storage unit then was filled in a matter of months with new stuff that she had acquired.
Plus you're paying, $4,000 a year for a storage
exactly,
unit.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing about the $4,000 is the storage companies are brilliant in the way they've marketed themselves. They've struck a chord, and yet they often offer a first month free, mm-hmm. or they're debiting the payment directly from your account. So you never many of the consumers that I interviewed talked about, I never even get to see, you know, never even have to look at a bill. It's just a silent deduction that is, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Hmm. Let's get some callers in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Kathleen. Kathleen is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
This is so perfect for me because my husband is a pack rat. It's something he learned from his mom, who lived in wartime Germany. But he had so much stuff in our basement, we couldn't even go down there, and I was so embarrassed. So I waited till he was out of town for 2 weeks.
Uh-oh.
I got a dumpster.
Uh-oh.
And I got my brother-in-law, who was just ruthless, and we went through there, and we made 5 trips to Goodwill, filled the dumpster, gave away stuff. I found 7 computer keyboards, 3 computers, 5 monitors, various recording equipment that we couldn't even identify.
Walmart, my question is, have the divorce papers been drawn up yet?
No. The best part was when I talked to him on the phone, I said, what I want you to do is when you go down there, don't look at what you don't have. Look at what you do have, which is a clean basement.
And he said,
pardon? And he said, thank you. He did, and it's been
good for
ever
him.
Since.
He's evolved.
But he recognized it.
You must have been trembling, though, when he first went down those steps.
Oh God, it was daunting. It was absolutely daunting, and it was almost embarrassing. But we have a clean basement. I can find things I need. I didn't throw away his 8 to 10 skateboards. I kept those.
That's probably what saved the marriage.
Exactly.
I wonder, how long are you projecting until that basement is filled up again?
Well, I've been watching it. I don't think we're going to have a problem till the kids become teenagers. Then we might have a problem.
Well, good luck, Kathleen.
Thank you.
That is funny. You know, she raises an interesting point, Neil, in that a lot of the organizers that I spoke to said that they are most effective in having their clients get rid of their storage units when the client gets to participate in. Yeah, so that's interesting that her husband was not
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, joining us now is Celia Perez. She's a librarian at Harold Washington College in Chicago and author of The Sassiest Girl in America, a piece she wrote for the zine Syndicate Product. And she's with us from our studios in Chicago. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
And the title of that article ought to give us a hint on what it is that you cannot bring yourself to get rid of.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to get rid of those sassy magazines. I've lugged them around for about 20 years now, and will probably carry them around for the rest of my life.
Why sassy magazine?
I think like a lot of women my age who grew up reading sassy, I'm very sentimental about it. That's the word for, you know, that comes mm-hmm. up with pack rat, sentimental. And it influenced my adolescence, and I think it influenced who I have become as an adult. And I enjoy every so often going back and flipping through them. And
oh, so you read them?
I still read them, yes.
And it's also a comfort to know they're there, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I peek in the closet and see my pile of sassies and get up the warm fuzzies. And I recently ordered, I didn't subscribe until about 89, so I recently ordered all of the issues that I didn't have
the
up to 89.
Issues.
Yes, on eBay. Yep.
And this can get pricey.
Well, now it's getting pricey, I think, because of the book that's come out. Everyone's trying to sell and everyone's trying to buy, but I managed to get pretty good prices on them.
Now, wait a minute. When you store them, do you put them in plastic bags with the backings and put the little piece of scotch tape there to make sure the air doesn't get in?
I know. As a librarian, I should, but I don't. They're in a pile in my one-year-old son's closet. He doesn't use the room, so everything that isn't used ends up in that room.
Mm. And how big is this collection?
Let's see. I probably have maybe around 50 or so. It's from 88 till I think about 94, and I have some duplicates.
Is this your only obsession?
obsession. I don't collect things, but if there is one thing that I guess I collect, it would be paper. I have paper, all kinds of paper, letters, canceled stamps, overdue library book receipts, show flyers. I just keep a lot of paper.
Canceled? This is not a stamp collection. These just happen to be canceled stamps.
Yeah, just stamps that I tear off envelopes and I plan to use them for something in the future.
Like what?
art projects. I make zines. I use them as art for my zines, that kind of thing.
I'm Suzanne Gannon, people have a lot of rationales for why they keep this stuff.
They do. The rationale, it's endless. I mean, one guy that I spoke to who managed to maintain two units in two different parts of the country talked about if one has a tendency to squirrel things away, he said, there's no reason not to put it in storage if you can afford the storage.
Mm-hmm. You will always find a reason to keep it.
Exactly.
Celia Perez, we just have a few seconds left, but how's your family feel about your stuff?
I think my husband would be very happy if I got rid of a lot of the paper. He figures if I haven't used it in the past 6 months, it needs to go. But I still think that once you get rid of it, that's when you're going to realize that you need it and you shouldn't have gotten rid of it. So.
Hang on to those sassies, though. You're going up in value. That's an investment.
That's right. That's history.
Celia Perez, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Celia Perez, a librarian, the author of The Sassiest Girl in America, a piece that appeared in the Zine Syndicate product, with us from our studios in Chicago. We'll talk more about the useless stuff we can't just bring ourselves to throw away after we come back. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are collectors and then there are pack rats. Our focus today is on people who just can't throw things away, no matter how useless they might be or how much space they might take up. In some cases, all those piles can become a real obsession. We'll get into that in a minute. Right now, our guest is Suzanne Gannon. She wrote about this for the New York Times in an article titled Hooked on Storage, and let us know the utterly useless thing you can't bring yourself to get rid of, or do you keep too much of everything? 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also weigh in at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And we'll begin with Selena. Selena's with us from California.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Okay, it's not about me. It's about my husband. I challenge anybody. He is the worst pack rat I've ever met. Like, the kind of things that I find, he keeps coupons. He had a coupon that expired in 1985. And it was for a place that no longer exists. Like the Federated Department Stores or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's no talking to him. I mean, you're like, what could you possibly do with this? I also found like a 2-for-1 coupon for a water slide in upstate New York. It'd been a place he'd never even been to upstate New York. But he held onto this coupon. And I just wish that he would put things in a storage locker. He doesn't. He wants to keep everything near at arm's reach so that he could get it at any moment for I don't know what. Like if a plate breaks or a cup or a teapot and it's in so many pieces you can't put it back together, he keeps it because he says, well, maybe I'll make an art project out of it. So we have like broken toasters and broken plates and all kinds of defunct machinery that one day he says he's going to make into an art project.
And where does he keep all of this stuff?
Well, we live in the country, and we have 3 acres, and we have a huge barn. And so, like, a lot of it is just, like, he puts it in the barn. He, like, tries to, like, hide it, you know, under things. And what I was saying earlier is I find it every once in a while when he's not looking, and I don't do it that often because he would divorce me if I did what the other woman did with the dumpster. is I'll take like some of his newspapers from like, you know, 17 years ago, and I'll put them in the recycling on recycling day. And he has this sixth sense about it. He actually goes through the recycling every single time I do it. He just senses that day that I did something, and he pulls it out of the trash and the recycling. And then he puts it back in the house.
Do you ever wonder what the archaeologists from, you know, 2,000 years in the future are going to think when they uncover your barn?
I know. I mean, it's just, it's so out of control. And, like, he just, it's a sickness, and I know you guys are going to get into that, because he can't give me any good reason. I say, just give me a plausible scenario in which you could possibly utilize one of these things. And he can't. He just knows that that it's his, and he found it, or someone gave it to him. Oh, and not even to mention ugly presents that people have given to him, and he will not let go of it.
The experts who study this, I mean, there's definitely a continuum here between, you know, that stretches from those who are mild clutterers to those who have an obsessive compulsive hoarding situation. But the experts say that it's not about the things as much as it is about an emotional or psychological attachment that the person has to these things. So
I've always felt like it's kind of territorial, because I moved into his house when we got engaged.
Interesting.
And it was filled with his things. And if his things were in there, then there was no room for my things. And every time I take out one of his things, he interprets it like it's just to make more room for my thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like our things are at battle with each other.
Well,
the battle of the things.
Selena, I sometimes wonder when people say I'm calling about my husband, you know, I'm calling about a friend who's got a problem. In your case, I believe you. I believe you. It's his problem.
Well, I mean, I have fantasies. I mean, seriously, I get sometimes these fantasies of, like, putting kerosene all over everything and just, like, lighting it up. I mean, you know, of bringing dumpsters in. But I know it just would end our marriage. He'd be so hurt and he'd feel so betrayed. I just can't do it to him.
Well, hang in there and don't go down the kerosene road. Thanks for the call, Selene.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hoarding things can be a true compulsion, as we just heard. There is another end of the continuum. Joining us now is Linda McIntosh. She is one of at least 2 million people in the U.S. who suffer from a crippling inability to discard. They are known as compulsive hoarders. Linda joins us now from her home in Connecticut. And thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we're laughing, but this can be a real problem.
Oh, it certainly is. It definitely affects your social life. Affects the anxiety level that I live with daily. It affects who can come and visit and who you can have stay over, you know.
I read a story that about you. It cost you a marriage.
Yes. Yeah.
Your boyfriend just couldn't deal with it.
That's correct.
Was he right?
It actually was a partner.
It was a partner?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now, they had their own problems also.
That tends to happen, yeah.
Between the two of us, it was very difficult at the time for her to deal with my issue as well as her own.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things do you hoard?
Anything that I think still has use to it. I'll drive down the street and I'll see a gas grill out. And it's very hard for me to continue driving down. To me, you know, it looks okay on the outside. All you need is a new burner on the inside, and you're good to go. Why throw the whole thing out when all you need is to replace one small part?
And do you ever replace that one small part?
Yes, I do.
So it does become of practical use.
Yes. I have many things in my home that are of great practical use to me. Many of my fans. I also have all of my outdoor furniture came from someone else's trash. To me, a lot of the things that we Americans throw out is stuff that does not need to be thrown out, that is salvageable.
It's not your personal responsibility, though, to save it.
And unfortunately, at one point, I did take it as my own responsibility. I'd drive through some of the better neighborhoods, and I'd be one of 20 cars out there at trash night picking through and getting things out.
So you're not alone?
No. And some of the people, I mean, for them, it's something that they need to live. Some people, it's what they're going to sell. For me, it was just, my God, they can't put this stuff in a landfill. I have a very strong feeling about the environment and trying to do what I can to protect it. And so I had that issue along with, this has life in it still.
But what about the environment inside your house? This stuff takes up a lot of room.
It's poisonous. My father's here visiting, and he's laughing.
I bet my family members are laughing as well.
it's very difficult. My mom hasn't been able to visit right now because she's in a nursing home and can no longer walk on her own. But even if I had a handicapped van that could bring her here, and if I could get her through, you know, the doors with a wheelchair, I still could not have her here. The path is not that wide.
Because it's filled with stuff.
Right.
Yeah. I understand that for a television story, they did a scan of your brain.
Yes.
And found that when they tried to throw, you tried to throw something away, well, what was the effect?
Well, they say that those of us who are hoarders react very differently when a piece of old mail that you haven't seen in 2 years, because many of us hold on to mail. And I have boxes and boxes of mail. Some of it is, like I said, 2 years old. And they had me bring in a bag of old mail that I hadn't gone through in 2 years. And they had me watch through a camera link in the MRI as they held it up and said, you know, do you want me to shred it or save it? And when I pressed shred it, my brain reacted entirely different from anybody else who has normal ability to throw things out.
That is fascinating.
That's interesting.
It was part of a pre-test study that I was in. They've actually contacted me since and asked me to be part of the actual study now.
I wonder, do you, in addition to putting stuff in your house, do you rent storage space?
I had to when we cleaned out my mom's house. Many of the things that I inherited ended up not having room for in my house. Things that I'd really love to have here, but I just simply don't have room.
And I know you've also spoken with counselors, and that they say this behavior can be modified, it can be somewhat improved, but
yes.
You're always going to feel like this.
Yeah, I think so, but I've got to tell you that 3 years ago, I think it was, that I stopped picking things up from the trash, and although it's still hard to drive by when I see good things, it doesn't give me the same feeling as it did 3 years ago when I first started driving by it.
Well, Linda McIntosh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, Linda McIntosh joined us today from her home in Connecticut. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Randy. Randy's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, how are you doing today?
All right.
I actually was a pack rat in my mid to late 20s, and the habit was broken by using mini storage.
It worked for you. You got the stuff into mini storage, got it out of your house, and it broke you of the habit? You didn't just fill up your house again?
Well, no. I was actually in service, and I gotten stationed overseas. And after a couple of years of being in East Asia, I actually lost track of my bills, didn't pay the storage fee. And they did what they always do, and that's lock it up and sell it off.
Mm-hmm.
I came back from overseas and realized it was gone and was heartbroken. I lost over 1,500 books that I had saved, every book I ever read. And but once that happened, I decided, well, I'm not going to trust anybody else. If I can't keep it in my house, then I don't need to keep it. And fortunately, I was married to a very strong woman who said, you will not keep it in my house. So I ended up having no place to put anything, so I had to break that habit. I still catch myself starting collections every now and then, and my wife stops me and says, no, you know, we're out of bookshelves, stop. And so she stops it for me.
It sounds like you've married well.
Yeah, I made a good choice.
Congratulations, Randy.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye. This does become an interpersonal problem. A lot of the people you spoke with, Suzanne Gannon, their partners and boyfriends and girlfriends just don't understand this.
Yes, and even it goes generationally. I spoke to several children of people who are, you know, somewhat addicted to their storage units, and in the children's view, they couldn't wait, you know, to have authority over it, to be able to dispose of it. So they obviously had not inherited that acquisitive holding on to gene.
Paul in Columbus, Ohio, sent this email. I have 23 years of birthday, Valentine's Day, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, Halloween, and graduation cards, none of which cost more than $1.99, all from relatives stored away in my closet. Not only does the pile get bigger every year, but I've begun to sort and file the cards according to sender, occasion, and year.
That's quite organized.
It's very organized. And that speaks to obviously talking to Linda McIntosh, this plays into obsessive-compulsive disorder, doesn't it?
It definitely does. I mean, I'm certainly not a psychologist, but that is what those that I interviewed had to say.
We're talking to Suzanne Gannon, freelance lifestyle writer, author of the New York Times article Hooked on Storage, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get John on the line. John's with us from Oregon.
You know, one of the things that happens is when I get something, as opposed to it being in your possession, once it's mine, it's worth twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just worth more because it's mine. I have an organizational disorder myself. I cannot. If you gave me five black squares and five round white balls and said, put them in two categories, before I was done, I would need a third category for some reason. I need a 12-step program for organization.
For getting organized.
Yeah.
Or a dominatrix with a whip. Pick that up. Whack. Pick that up. I just can't do it by myself, Lord. It's bigger than me.
Yeah. Well, you can hire professional help, can't you?
I can't find one.
Well, they're all over the place. There are a couple of websites that specifically cater to the kind of need that you have. And many of the organizers that I spoke to actually said that they guess that their clients who have storage units do not know that 80% of them don't even know what is in
the storage
unit. Yeah.
Well, I don't need a storage unit because I've got a small path through my house. But I maintain that path, by golly.
Well, good luck, John, and keep the path open.
Thanks very much.
Right, bye-bye. Let's talk to Mike, and Mike is with us from Florida.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, you know, I'm not a pack rat, but I've got one item in my attic that I just can't get rid of, and it's a 30-year-old parachute that I used to jump with. And Lord knows I'm not going to try to use it anymore, but it's just something that is hung around, and my wife says, when are you going to get rid of that? And I can't bring myself to just toss it on the curb.
Why?
I don't know. It's just, maybe it's the fond memories that I had of skydiving 30 years ago. And Lord knows I'm smart enough not to go out and use it again.
I was going to say, nobody would want to use a 30-year-old parachute.
Now, see, that's interesting, Neil, that Neil's reaction was why, and my reaction was, oh, how sweet. You can see on what side of the fence I fall.
Yeah.
Happy landings, Mike.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can go now to, this is the Reverend Wiggins, and he's calling us from Tanzania.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, we couldn't throw anything away either. But when we decided to move to Africa, we knew we couldn't afford to bring everything. So we ended up giving or selling away everything and coming with only two suitcases.
Wow.
It was very difficult.
I bet it was a traumatic.
Empty storage containers.
And do you miss?
But it was very freeing.
I was going to say, do you miss the stuff?
No, we really don't. But there are other missionaries here who have had 40-foot containers shipped to them that they have never opened because it was the stuff that was in their storage containers in the U.S.
Yes. This is I've heard this story before.
I did I did store stuff in a storage unit when my family moved to London when I was bureau chief in London for National Public Radio. And when we got back and got the stuff back, he said, why did we keep this stuff exactly? Well, Reverend Wiggins, congratulations, and we appreciate you taking the time to call us.
Okay, it was hard at first to get rid of this stuff, but then it became exciting because we would think, oh, we know somebody who could use this. They've got a collection of these.
Well, that's because you're a good...
We kind of helped other people clutter up their homes.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. And Suzanne Gannon, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Suzanne Gannon, a freelance lifestyle writer, author of the New York Times article, Hooked on Storage. She joined us today from our bureau in New York. Of course, new technology gives us even more ways to hoard things. Computers and the giant-sized hard drives that come with them. Yes, sirree. Storage by the terabit. We'll be on that after this. Books, stamps, shoes, comic books, they can take up space in your closet, but there's also stuff clogging up digital closets. Emails, photos, embarrassing MP3s. Like most things nowadays, pack rats are digital, too. They're hoarding e-books, music, movies, bookmarks, and it's taking up thousands of gigabytes and a few mental gigs, too. What's slowing down your downloads? How many times a day does that pesky systems administrator tell you your inbox is over its limit? Join the conversation. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Mark McCluskey is the product editor for Wired Magazine. He joins us from his office in San Francisco, and he's got a little experience with info hoarding himself. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark, are you a digital pack rat yourself?
I think I have what you could call a mild case of digital pack rattery, for the lack of a better term. Yeah, it's another manifestation of that collecting impulse that has sort of always been there, that, you know, completion need that people have.
And it starts with what in your case?
Music is a pretty good example in my case. You know, you start to look for obscure singles from your favorite bands. You look for special editions that, you know, normally you wouldn't necessarily be able to find a record store, but, you know, maybe somebody's ripped it. You know, Napster was a great way back in the day to acquire those things, perhaps not quite legally.
Yeah, and not only the studio version, but, of course, the live version, and they may have performed it live several times.
The live music thing is, you know, there's a huge universe, you know, of live music trading that, you know, the Grateful Dead really pioneered in a lot of ways, and that's moved online to a large extent, and now, you know, with bands that really encourage that sort of thing, there's just thousands and thousands and thousands of songs and performances that people can collect and not listen to.
And not listen to. I don't know how old you are, but have you moved through different platforms? I mean, started out with vinyl and then switched it all to tape and then switched it all to CD and now it's all digital?
Yeah, the tail end of vinyl, but then lots of tapes and then, you know, thousands of CDs, and now slowly trying to convert all those CDs to digital, but then also acquiring new things in digital.
Mm-hmm. There is one of the attractions of things like Gmail, for example. One of the ways they attract you to it is you don't ever have to throw away your email.
And, you know, I think there's something powerful in that notion. What it requires is really good tools to find what you're looking for. You know, as storage has become so easy and, you know, approaches zero cost, frankly. You know, you can buy enough storage now to store every piece of music you could conceivably ever listen to in a lifetime for, you know, a few hundred dollars. You start to get to this place where the problem isn't acquisition. The problem is knowing what you have.
Mm-hmm. Organization.
Exactly.
Yeah. In your case, the music files, this is a bunch of stuff that, for the most part, you don't listen to.
It's hard to listen to all of that music, you know. There's, you know, I have a much smaller music collection than, you know, I know people with terabytes of music, which is just an astonishing amount of music. You know, I have a couple hundred gigabytes of MP3s in my world, and, you know, that's literally years of constant listening.
So if you put it all on a shuffle...
Yeah, if you put it all in a shuffle, you know, in a couple of years, I'll have to restart the shuffle.
Yeah,
you know,
just to.
But there's always that thought of, you know, one day I'll be sitting down. It's like, what I really want to hear is the Goo Goo Dolls cover of "I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man," which is a Prince song, and that was on this album. And I think I've got that, and lo and behold, I do. And mm-hmm. and that's the gratifying moment for sort of the hoarder, is like that moment where you can tap into that library and find that one crazy little thing that just crosses your mind one day.
Do you get obsessed with tracking down that one B-side that you don't have?
You know, I have not gotten quite that bad on some things. There are a few bands that I'm a particular fan of that, yeah, there is that sort of completionist, you know, that everything that they ever recorded, I can just that last song, there's something really, it's a quest. It's that collecting quest that, you know, mm-hmm. spans everything from digital music to comic books to people who collect Wedgwood China to, you know, it's...
Wait a minute. My 9 boxes of comic books are nothing like your downloads.
See, but you could be downloading those comic books as well.
I know, but then I wouldn't have them to touch. It's a tactile thing with me.
And, you know, I think that's a little... It's an interesting transition, the sort of... from the tactile to the ephemeral nature of digital in some ways. Is it about the thing, the artifact itself, or is mm-hmm. it about the content in the thing?
It's about both in my case, but, you know, there are comic books in there that I haven't read in more decades than I'd care to think about, and there are some that I never read at all.
Well, and, you know, comic books are kind of an interesting example of this. It's something that we've written about the magazine a little bit. There are plenty of collectors, comic book collectors, who buy comic books, put mm-hmm. them in a Mylar sleeve, and actually never crack that comic book open.
Because you're reducing the value the minute you open it.
Well, exactly. It's like taking
I'm
the
not
toy
that
out.
Bad. Yeah.
It's taking the toy out of the original packaging, right? It's never worth as much now.
Yeah.
What the digital side of comics lets you do is actually read the comic book without worrying about that, which can be a nice analog if you want to keep your mm-hmm. good copy in. Safely,
pristine, mint condition, as they would say.
Yeah, safely ensconced in its Mylar.
Yeah, well, mine, of course, were kept to help pay for my children's college education. Of course, my children are both out of college, and I still have all the comic books. Anyway, we're talking about digital hoarding now. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Nick is with us. Nick is calling us from Boise, Idaho.
Hi. Yeah, I am a musical completist as well, and I've lived in the same town for 27 years, so I've sort of had records and tapes and 8-tracks and everything, 500 CDs, and just recently I decided to go to graduate school, so I've had to sort of pare down, and what I've been doing is actually transferring the vinyl over onto a personal digital external hard drive and sort of packing it all in that way, you know, and it's amazing, you know, the personal digital opportunities that you can have for, you know, $100 or $80. You can get 250 gigs and back up thousands and thousands of albums. And I miss the tactile part of it. You
yeah.
know, this Charles Mingus album that's really rare that I like to look at the album cover and everything. And so when I come home from graduate school, I'm going to certainly enjoy having that part of it again. But, I mean,
so you're keeping all the vinyl.
I'm keeping all the vinyl. I couldn't possibly sell it, but it's going into storage while I move away because, you know, living in a house in Boise, I can have all that stuff around me. Living in a little apartment in Chicago is not going to be quite the same possibility.
That's interesting. And Mark McCluskey, as you think about it, in the world of vinyl collecting, most often it's not the record itself that's valuable, the music, it's the jacket, it's the cover.
Right. You know, I mean, and that's something we actually saw in the sort of transition from vinyl to cassettes and CDs is, you know, the 12 by 12 inch vinyl record cover is one of the great, like, graphic design platforms of all time. And it's an amazing place to do something cool visually. And, you know, when you get a CD jewel case that's, you know, a 4.5-5 inch square, that's mm-hmm. much less compelling than, you know, cassette cases.
Nowhere near as gratifying, yeah.
Right.
I know that some people have frames for their records and things like that, you know, and if you find it online somewhere and you can back it up digitally that way, that allows you to still enjoy the music but actually have it as the artwork as well.
Hmm. Right.
Well, Nick, have a great time in Chicago and good luck with your studies. I hope you're not studying collecting.
No.
Okay, good. We'll let you go then. Let's see if we can get Chris on the line. And Chris is with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi. I dated a girl for about 2 years, and for about nine months of those 2 years, she was staying in Belgrade, Serbia. She was studying for school.
Uh-huh.
So we would get into these really epic emails, you know, day after day, and it's just gigs and gigs. And I've since actually switched email accounts, but I just can't bring myself to get rid of them. You know, just, I don't go and read them or anything, but it's just nice to know that they're there, you know?
And do you still have the girlfriend?
Oh, no, we broke up about a year ago.
And you still want to keep the emails?
Yeah, you know, it's a sentimental thing, I guess.
I think a lot of people have a box full of letters kicking around that they've kept over the course of their lives, you know, significant things that people have written them, you know, as...
Yeah, tied in a little ribbon, yeah.
Tied in a little ribbon, yeah. And, you know, as that starts to happen in email, it's feeding the same psychological urges. It's just not physical.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chris, thanks for the call, and good luck with the new girlfriend, maybe.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're talking about digital pack rats with Mark McCluskey, the products editor at Wired Magazine, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Sheldon on the line. Sheldon's with us from St. Augustine in Florida.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
First off, do you have a spare copy of Killdozer?
Killdozer was not one of mine. No,
okay.
If I do, it's because I acquired it somehow and never read it. But Killdozer wasn't one of my faves. No.
Well, it was a bad film as well as a mediocre comic. But...
Well, there's a lot of them that are mediocre comics and bad movies, but I still have them in my collection.
Well, I'm a second generation pack rat. I'm trying to get my mother into digitizing some of the stuff that she's collected. But I have the same problem with vinyl. I can't bear to part with it. I've even saved broadcast carts from a station that I worked at here in town.
Carts?
And do you have the machine with which to...
I do.
Oh, okay. Well, at least you can't...
in the dumpster as well, and I couldn't bear to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
People should know, those of us who've been in radio a long, long time, I thought I would be buried with a cart machine. These were industrial pieces of equipment that failed, about one every five times you tried to hit the cart?
Well, it depends on your broadcast engineer. Our guy was really good, so we could probably get 2 or 3 years out of a cart without a critical failure.
But it would tend to wobble. The tape would wobble over the heads.
Oh, yeah, you'd get... I have some very interesting bad recording.
Wow and flutter effects. But these were devices that until very recently, we had cart machines here at National Public Radio that our broadcast engineers, of course, are top-notch, too. But every once in a while, you hear Carl Castle gnashing his teeth because the cart wouldn't fire. Carts. God, I couldn't imagine anybody would collect those things.
Oh, certainly. I just have to figure out how to put them into current use in the house. But dealing with my mother's stuff and my stuff as well, I finally started to get to the point where, well, let's see, maybe I don't need 400 copies of... Well, I found 4 copies of one album one day. But my question for your guest is, roughly how large, uncompressed, how big of a hard drive would I need for about, 2,500 albums?
Uncompressed. Well, doing some quick math, I mean, an uncompressed CD or album, it generally will run you somewhere on the order of a gigabyte or two.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So the 160 that I've been fearful to put in my computer will actually work. That's great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a good day.
And you'll have room for the entire Library of Alexandria.
There we go.
There you go.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can talk to Megan. Megan's with us from Oakland, California.
Hi. My comment was when I used to have an old Macintosh, and I would download very slowly many MP3s from television shows. That was like, you know, when the Internet started putting pictures and things like that where you could download them onto your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually my... drive would get full, so I put them on the lovable diskette. And then I had hundreds of diskettes of just little bits of TV trivia and things like that. And then finally, it got to the point where I was getting really bad, and I saw a special on TV about Buddhism, and they were creating this amazing sand sculpture, this big, huge, took them hours, it took them, I don't know how many hours, but... when they were all done, they just wiped it away and destroyed all the work that they had done. And after I saw that, it sort of broke my habit of collecting things. You know, when you realize that, I think your guest said it earlier, that really it's about the content of what you're collecting rather than the actual physical item itself. It's sort of knowing that you have this attachment to something that's more important than actually keeping it. So that was my comment.
And, you know, it's, I think that there are just some people built it with the collecting gene, for lack of a better term. You know, I think that there are plenty, you know, I have friends who, you know, have 10 albums, and that's what they listen to. And, you know, they buy music that they want to hear and have no desire to sort of hoard and complete and have this thing. And, you know, then they're the people who end up buried under, you know, the newspaper they haven't thrown out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Megan,
I like to think I'm somewhere in the middle.
And Megan, it sounds like you've come, you've really arrived at a whole change of life.
I'm hoping so. Although now that I've got an iPod Shuffle, I'm finding that I want to download more music. So now I gotta find some spiritual way of disconnecting myself from MP3 players. So we'll get there.
Good luck with it, Megan.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. And Mark McCluskey, we wish you well, and should your shuffle last 1,000 years.
Thank you very much.
Mark McCluskey is the products editor for Wired Magazine. He joined us from his office in San Francisco. Ira Flatow will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll see you on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.